This is the Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1-224-222-0777.
Hello, and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson, and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson, and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 788 for release on Sunday, March 31st, 2024. On WaveScan today, the Zenith Radio Story, Part 1. Changes coming at BBC Radio 4. And our Indian DX report with lots of DX news. Recently, WaveScan listener Vince Kopke sent us a PDF copy of a brochure produced by the Zenith Radio Corporation in 1955, detailing some of the early history of the company. If you've ever been lucky enough to own a Zenith transoceanic receiver, you know how important this company was to the shortwave listening audience. The brochure makes for fascinating reading, and so we've decided to serialize it over a few weeks here in the broadcast. This week, Ray Robinson has the first part, covering from the very early days up until the early 1920s.
Thanks, Jeff. The history of Zenith was to a considerable degree a history of the radio and television industry in the United States. This was so because Zenith was a pioneer and leader in radionics since before there was a radio industry, and it played an important role in almost every important development during radio growth from an amateur toy to the most significant, widespread and effective system of communications in history. On December the 14th, 1901, Guglielmo Marconi flashed the letter S across the Atlantic Ocean by wireless telegraph, and thereby launched a revolution in communications that was destined to bring profound changes in the pattern of civilization. Marconi's tremendous achievement brought only passing attention from the adult public, but it kindled the imagination of eager youngsters everywhere. In the decade that followed, many of these youngsters dismayed their parents by devoting more time and effort to Marconi's toy than to preparing themselves for a future in something practical. Two of these wireless doodlers lived hundreds of miles apart and were to meet only by sheer chance. R.H.G. Matthews of Chicago pursued the hobby and qualified as an amateur radio operator in 1912. In 1915, he began building and selling wireless equipment to other amateurs. Carl Hassel of Sharpsville, Pennsylvania, won his amateur license in 1915 and then matriculated at the University of Pittsburgh. Here he discovered that he was the only person on the campus, student or faculty, who knew how to operate the university's newly constructed wireless station. Came World War I and both boys enlisted in the Navy. They met at Great Lakes Naval Training Station and worked together on radio until 1918. They then set up a continuation of Matthews' business as Chicago Radio Laboratory, building and selling radio sets. Their first factory was a table in Matthews' kitchen. Their tools were pliers, screwdrivers, a hand drill, and a soldering iron that had to be heated over the burner of a gas stove. From this kitchen table workshop grew the business that was to become Zenith Radio Corporation. Early in their business life, Matthews and Hassel began a long series of radio firsts that became a Zenith tradition. One of their first ventures was the construction of a long-wave radio receiver for the Chicago Tribune, which was used to pick up news dispatches about the Versailles Peace Conference from a long-wave station in France. This short-circuiting of the congested transatlantic cable enabled the Tribune to beat competitors by 12 to 24 hours on conference stories. The varnish had scarcely dried on the kitchen table workbench before the fledgling business needed larger quarters. the boys built a new factory near the Edgewater Beach Hotel. It was a shanty-like structure that gave them a working space of 14 by 18 feet, with a cubbyhole for their amateur radio station, 9ZN. At about the same time, they published their first catalogue. A few months later, they coined the trade name Z-Nith, spelt Z-NITH, from the call letters of their radio station, 9ZN. This was the origin of the trademark Zenith. The next Zenith first was construction and installation of a wireless system that made the Nashville, Chattanooga and St. Louis Railway the first railroad in the world to successfully dispatch trains by wireless telegraph. Transmitters and receivers were set up in Tullahoma, Tennessee and Guntersville, Alabama to handle traffic over the rough country between. Initial difficulties included such things as the transmitters setting off a bank's burglar alarm during a director's meeting, adding a high-voltage shock to the pain of a dentist's drill while he was working on a touchy patient, and putting nearby telephones out of service. These problems were ironed out. The system went into service and operated successfully for several years. By the end of 1919, the Z-Nith partnership was thriving, with production exceeding one complete set per week. In May 1920, the boys acquired their most important asset, a license to use the basic regenerative circuit patent of radio's greatest inventive genius, the late Major Edwin H. Armstrong. Until the latter part of 1920, Chicago Radio Laboratory concentrated on building equipment for the growing army of radio amateurs, or hams as they soon came to be known. A change came in November of that year. Radio broadcasting, as we know it today, was non-existent. The University of Wisconsin had begun in 1919 a regular broadcast schedule of news, market reports, weather information, and general programs from its station 9XN, now WHA, which has been licensed to the University of Wisconsin since 1922 and still broadcasts Wisconsin Public Radio 102 years later on 970 AM. Initially, as a public service for radio amateurs, WHA developed a unique program. Each noon, it radiotelegraphed the weather report in fast code for expert hams. The report was then repeated in slow code so that beginners could take it. After that, an announcer read the weather report for the general public, and so that beginner hams could check their accuracy. Here and there around the country, other stations produced similar schedules, but only a narrow segment of the public showed interest. Then came the presidential election of 1920. News of the Harding landslide was disseminated with startling speed throughout the country by station KDKA in Pittsburgh and other stations. The public suddenly realized that Marconi's toy was a very useful and practical communications tool. Broadcasting began in earnest. Hassell and Matthews quickly put on the market a receiver with which the general public could hear the growing number of broadcasts. Business boomed, and within a few months, the walls of Chicago Radio Laboratory's new factory were bulging. So the company moved to a mammoth 3,000-square-foot plant on Ravenswood Avenue, with a staggering rental of $300 per month and a payroll of 6 employees. At this time, the boys bought their first power tool, a motor-driven drill press, and boosted production to more than one set per day. In the meantime, E.F. McDonald Jr. of Syracuse, New York, had established himself in the automobile business in Chicago, where he introduced the first successful plan for selling automobiles on time payments. He'd served through the war in naval intelligence and been discharged with the rank of lieutenant commander and was looking around for a new business. On New Year's Eve 1920, McDonald went to a garage to pick up his automobile and noticed several men listening to music coming from a box. He asked the proprietor what there was about this phonograph to make people listen to it on New Year's Eve. "That's no phonograph," he was told. "That's a radio. They're listening to music through the air from Pittsburgh." McDonald learned that it would take several months to get delivery on a radio set for himself and decided he'd found his new business, for which he'd been searching since the end of the war. However, it wasn't that simple. He found out that he'd need a license to use the inventions of Major E.H. Armstrong, and Armstrong licenses were no longer available. Temporarily balked, MacDonald soon heard about the two young men, Hassell and Matthews, who were building radio receivers on Chicago's north side. Thinking about that radio set, he paid a visit to the Ravenswood factory and took particular fancy to a set that sold for $75, less tubes, batteries and headphones, mark you. Hassell, in person, came to MacDonald's residence at the Illinois Athletic Club to install it and didn't leave until he collected his money. Recalling the occasion, Hassell said, "It wasn't a question of whether I trusted him or not. We needed the money to keep going." Hassell and Matthews had the all-important Armstrong license and more business than they could handle with the equipment they owned. But they were short on capital. MacDonald joined forces with them, provided funds for expansion, and became general manager of Chicago Radio Laboratory. One of his first moves was to change the trademark from Zenith to Zenith. Normally, capital investment in an existing business results in an equity for the investor. In this case, however, the largest investor, MacDonald, owned no interest whatsoever in Chicago Radio Laboratory, and for a very good reason. The Armstrong license was held by Chicago Radio Laboratory, a co-partnership, and it was not transferable. This also had its bearing on the organization of Zenith Radio Corporation. When that company was formed in 1923, it was not a manufacturer. Instead, it was the exclusive sales and marketing organization for handling radio equipment built by Chicago Radio Laboratory. This arrangement continued until other developments made a consolidation possible, at which time the entire assets and business of Chicago Radio Laboratory were acquired and Zenith became a manufacturer in its own name. And that's where we have to leave the Zenith story this week. We'll continue with part two in a few weeks' time. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks very much, Ray. Next week we'll be looking at the American state of Texas on shortwave. By the way, today is the beginning of the A24 broadcast season on shortwave. Some stations may have programs at different times and frequencies than they have been. Just a quick hello to our WaveScan listener, Richard Lemke, in St. Albert, Alberta, Canada, who sent us a reception report for WaveScan via WWCR in Nashville, Tennessee, at 0330 UTC Sunday on 4840 kHz. Just one of the many times and stations and frequencies where you can hear WaveScan each week on shortwave. By the way, Ray noticed an item by Roy Martin in Radio Today about a major change at the BBC Radio 4. The station will turn off its medium wave frequencies and end its separate schedule for long wave by April 15th. Daily service and the extended edition of Yesterday in Parliament will be available on BBC Radio 4 Extra on DAB, Digital TV, and BBC Sounds, that's their website, from April 1st. Upon its return, Test Match Special will continue uninterrupted on Radio 5 Sports Extra on DAB, Digital TV, and BBC Sounds. The shipping forecast will continue to be broadcast on BBC Radio 4 twice a day on weekdays and three times a day on weekends. This will be available on all platforms, FM, DAB, BBC Sounds, and Digital TV. This means that there will no longer be a separate schedule for Radio 4 Longwave, and the BBC is encouraging listeners to transition to alternative platforms from April 1st. Finally, Radio 4 will no longer be available on medium wave, meaning the end to the following frequencies on April 15th. In Aberdeen, 1449 kHz medium wave. In Belfast, 720. Carlisle, 1485. Cornwall, 756 kHz. Enniskillen, 774. London, 720. Londonderry, 720. Newcastle, 603. And Plymouth, 774 kHz medium wave. Ray points out that Radio 4 Longwave is on 198 kHz, but it's not going off the air on April 15th. Hitherto, Radio 4 has had split programming at some times of the day with different content on Longwave than on FM DAB. What's happening on April 1st, not the 15th, is that there will no longer be any split content, and the Longwave transmitters, there are three of them, will carry exactly the same programming as on FM. The content that was previously on Longwave only will now be moving either to Radio 4 Extra or 5 Live Sports, two BBC streaming-only services. While the company that runs the long-wave transmitters doesn't want to keep investing in the old technology, there are no plans to turn those transmitters off anytime soon. Alan Weiner at WBCQ in Maine, USA, has advised us that the Great April Eclipse Path will be going straight through the area of WBCQ in northern Maine on Monday, April 8th, at about 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 19:30 UTC. Alan says there should be some interesting propagation effects, so you may want to check out shortwave reception during the eclipse on April 8th. Now we go to Prithviraj Prakayasta for our Indian DX report.
Namaskar from the beautiful northeast Indian state of Assam. This is your friend Prithviraj Prakayasta, VU3TQD, reporting for the Webscan. Friends, the summer broadcast season for 2024 has just begun, and here are some updates from some broadcasters. Vatican Radio has revised its broadcast schedule, and the station can be heard now in English on every Fridays between 11:30 to 12 hour UTC on 15595 kHz and 17790 kHz. Vatican Radio will broadcast in Hindi, Tamil and Malayalam languages daily between 14:30 to 15:30 UTC on 11700 and 15490 kHz. Trans World Radio can be heard in English on every Fridays between 13:15 to 13:30 UTC on 17700 kHz. TWR in Hindi language can be heard every Monday to Friday on 17700 kHz between 13 to 13:15 UTC and on every Tuesday and Thursday between 13:15 to 13:30 UTC on the same frequency. KTWR in English can be heard on Sundays between 11 to 11:15 UTC on 11965 kHz and between 11:30 to 11:45 UTC on 9910 kHz. From Monday to Friday between 11 to 11:30 UTC on 11965 kHz and between 12:45 to 13 hour UTC on 15400 kHz. KTWR Bengali language transmission can be heard between 14 to 14:15 UTC on 15400 kHz on every Saturdays. Reach Beyond Australia can be heard in English, Hindi and different regional Indian languages in South India between 12 to 14 hour UTC on 15460 kHz. And in North India between 12:30 to 14 hour UTC on 11900 kHz and between 14 to 14:30 UTC on 11870 kHz. During A24 season, the NHK World Radio Japan in Bengali can be heard on 11655 kHz between 15 to 15:20 UTC. And their Hindi language transmission can be heard again on 11655 kHz between 15:30 to 15:50 UTC. KBS World Radio in Seoul, South Korea has announced that it will transmit in English between 14 to 16 hour UTC on 9785 kHz instead of 9630 kHz. And here are few revised transmission schedule for Adventist World Radio, the Voice of Hope in some languages. AWR in Assamese every Sunday and Wednesday between 13:30 to 14 hour UTC on 17790 kHz. Bengali daily on 15430 kHz between 13 to 13:30 UTC. Hindi language daily transmission can be heard on 12080 kHz and 11955 kHz between 15:30 to 16 hour UTC. Urdu can be heard daily on 11 955 and 17565 kHz between 16 to 1630 UTC. AWR Mizo language transmission can be heard daily on 15605 kHz between 15 to 1530 UTC. That English language daily transmission on 15515 kHz between 2 to 3 hour UTC and on 15505 kHz between 14 to 15 hour UTC. English language transmission can be heard from Sunday to Wednesday and Saturdays on 12060 kHz from 1530, that is 1530 to 16 hour UTC. And here are some of my latest monitoring updates on international broadcasters. Radio Romania International in English was heard between 12 to 13 hour UTC on 15460 kHz with SINPO 34222. IBRA Media with Bengali program Batighar was heard on 7470 kHz at 1515 UTC, SINPO 35343. AWR in Hindi was heard between 1530 to 16 hour UTC on 15705 kHz, SINPO 34333. AWR Webscan was received here in Jorhat between 1530 to 16 hour UTC on 15530 kHz with SINPO rating 45333. AWR in English was heard on 15510 kHz between 0 to 30 to 3 hour UTC, SINPO 34333. Voice of Vietnam in English was heard on 7220 kHz between 16 to 1628 UTC with SINPO 54444. Radio New Zealand was heard with nice and fair reception between 12 to 13 hour UTC on 13755 kHz, SINPO 55444. BBC World Service was received on 12030 kHz between 12 to 13 hour UTC with SINPO 55444. Radio Taiwan International is always coming with a local FM like reception here in my place between 16 to 17 hour UTC on 9405 kHz. Radio Thailand in English received on 9385 kHz at 1215 UTC with SINPO 33232. Bangladesh Betar in English language was heard on 4750 kHz at 1235 UTC with SINPO rating of the reception as 45333. Radio Filipinas in English was heard between 0230 to 03 hour UTC on 17820 kHz with SINPO 35332. World Christian Broadcasting KNLS was heard at 330 UTC on 13760 kHz with SINPO rating 25232. IRIB Radio Tehran in Bengali was heard on 11850 kHz at around 15 hour UTC with SINPO 34323. Radio Japan in Bengali language was heard on 11610 kHz between 15 to 1520 UTC and the Hindi language transmission on the same frequency between 1530 to 1550 UTC. The reception condition was excellent and SINPO may be given as all 5. And friends, with this I would like to conclude this edition of Indian DX report on WebScan. I hope the information will be beneficial to you. If you have any comment and suggestion on this DX capsule or want to send me a reception report, then please write to me at indiandxreport@gmail.com. That is indiandxreport@gmail.com. So until next time, stay safe with your loved ones. Bye-bye and 73s from Assam.
Thank you, Prithviraj. On the occasion of World Radio Day last month, Radio Slovakia International talked to Mirta Lorenzo, Chief of Media Development at UNESCO, about the future of radio while keeping in mind its 100 years history.
In 2011, UNESCO declared 13th of February as World Radio Day. A 2022 study by the European Broadcasting Union confirmed that radio still continues to be the most trusted media. In 2024, the main theme of this holiday celebrates the centenary of the beginning of radio broadcasting in the world. The British BBC started it in 1922, followed a year later by the first attempts and regular broadcasts in Czechoslovakia, which were commemorated throughout last year on Czech radio. Slovak radio will celebrate 100 years of regular broadcasting in 2026. What is the future of radio in the time of information overload? Mirta Lorenzo from UNESCO gives her answer.
Yes, indeed, it's a noisy age. We are living in a noisy world with a lot of information, false information, and in a context in which those giving information are facing competition for attention, for influence. And in this context, we have to remember that radio is still the most trusted medium. There is a report actually from the European Broadcasting Union from 2022, and this report confirmed that radio is still the most trusted media, that people, when they want to get information, they prioritize radio over social networks, over TV, even newspaper. So it still has the greatest trust of people.
And the preceding segment came to us from Radio Slovakia International. And we end today's edition of WaveScan with traditional music from Slovakia. Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, the American state of Texas on shortwave. An interview with our WaveScan founder, Dr. Adrian Peterson, and our Japan DX report. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.
This is the Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1 224 222 0777.